I have referred to his legal opinion as a heterodox legal opinion. The Federal Information Security Management Act, or FISMA, requires each agency to inventory its major computer systems, identify appropriate security protections, and develop, document, and implement an agency-wide information security program. FISMA also requires an annual independent review of agency information security program. This review assesses the effectiveness of the information security programs, plans, and compliance of FISMA. The Office of Management and Budget is then required to comply a summary of federal government security performance and report to Congress on the implementation of FISMA. In our hearing last week on academic and legal implications of the DA's data loss, I said the department doesn't identify who is in charge of the developing policy, implementing policy, or enforcing policy. The March 2006 FISMA report confirms my statement, indicating VA received a grade of F in a category on establishing and following information security policy. Today, despite evidence piled high over the years that the department's refusal to get control of its IT systems undermines efficiency, that it threatens the security of sensitive information, and it endangers patient safety, despite the fact of the unprecedented data compromise that has revealed much larger problems related to decentralization. The centurions of the status quo in VA administrations, especially in its health administration, insist on protecting their turf, and veterans and families, I believe, could pay the price. Today, through the eyes of two former VA CIOs, Bob McFarland and Dr. John Goss, we have a unique opportunity to examine what occurred within the department during the years that this evidence accumulated and was sadly disregarded by many who could have made a difference. We also welcome General Bob Howard, the VA's Acting Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology, and Robert Brandewee is the Director of Defense Manpower Data Center, and Jim Brinson, Managing Partner, Vice President of Gartner Consulting. Jim, we thank you in advance for your willingness to be here and to contribute to these proceedings. I believe your insights today will be extremely important. I also would like to recognize in the crowd, in the audience today, we have veterans from the Merchant Marines of World War II. We thank you for your presence. We welcome you to the Veterans Affairs Committee Room, and we thank you for your service to country. You and your generation truly have made a difference in freedom of the world, and you left liberty in your footsteps. I will like you to know we have some votes that are now about to occur. I'll recognize Mr. Filner for an opening statement, and that I would welcome the Merchant Mariners to meet. There's a room directly behind. And what I'll have is when we leave, I'll turn you over to Kelly Craven, our staff director. Kelly's right here. Kelly, if you'll stand up. And I'll have committee staff speak with the Merchant Mariners. Mr. Filner?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your courtesy to the Mariners who are here. As you know, many are in the late 70s and 80s, served our country in World War II, had the highest casualty rates of anybody, any service in the war, and yet when the war was over, the GI Bill did not apply to them. And even later, attempts to make up for a past injustice was not done. They missed out on the college education provided by the GI Bill, purchase of homes. As you know, Mr. Chairman, I have a bill, H.R. 23, called a belated thank you to our merchant mariners of World War II. A majority of the Congress, over 260, have co-sponsored it. A majority of this committee has co-sponsored it. And I think they would like to talk to you and your staff about trying to get a vote on that at some point in this Congress. So I appreciate your courtesy, Mr. Chairman. Am I recognized for the opening statement on this hearing? And we will have votes, and the staff of both the Democrats and Republicans will be talking to you, and we'll try to join you later during the hearing. Again, Mr. Chairman, your opening.
Mr. Filner?
Yes, sir.
If I could do this by way of procedure, we have Mr. Farr is here. of California, and he would like to introduce one of the witnesses that are here that is here today. Can we yield to Mr. Farr?
Please.
Can we do that?
I'd be happy
introduction?
To. Thank you.
And then we'll do Mr. Farr.
Thank you for that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. It's a pleasure for me. I'm a member of the Appropriations Subcommittee with this jurisdiction, the Military Quality of Life and Veterans Affairs, and we had a similar hearing yesterday in that hearing, and the chairman was there, and I appreciate this effort. I want to just tell you that out in my district, I represent the former Fort Ord, which is the largest military base ever closed in the United States. And out of that, the Department of Defense kept a manpower development center there. It's a center where all of the personnel information for all of the people in the military and their families is kept. And it's available 24/7. And you get calls from all over the world from spouses wondering about health care insurance or about issues of family or soldiers or, you know, divorce status or all the kinds of data that one would have. And that center has been leading and helping the Department of Veterans Affairs with their security issues. And the fellow who's really done the work to keep this center a state-of-the-art quality center in that is Robert Brandewire. He's here as a speaker today. He's developed the Defense Biometric Identity System, which has centralized a database that integrates biometric and other information. He's also received all kinds of awards and is now being considered as one of the four finalists for the 2006 Service to America Medal to be awarded in September. And it's just a pleasure to have somebody with such high skills and such incredible accomplishments come and share what they're actually doing on the ground to help men and women in uniform. So I thank you for allowing me to introduce my constituent to you, and good luck with your committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Farr. We appreciate your work on appropriations as you work with us to come to these solutions and be an assistance to the VA. So thank you for your quality work. To the members, we have one vote. It is a motion to adjourn. I'd like to recess the committee. When we return, then Mr. Filner will give an opening statement. We'll proceed with testimony. The committee stands in recess for about 7 minutes. Somebody get the door, please. Committee will come back to order. Mr. Filner, you're now recognized for an opening statement.
Mr. Chairman, since we've kept these people long waiting through the vote, I'm going to submit my statement for the record. I do agree with everything you said, and so I don't need to add anything. I'd just like to add one little remark, if I may. Mr. Chairman, Secretary Nicholson said that they're going to correct this problem, but we have to be patient. And I think we know what he means by being patient. As you have been personally working on it, it took the VA at least 7 years to address this problem. And during our May 25th hearing, you directed VA officials to submit a chronology, timelines of events related to the handling of information related to the data loss, and you asked it for about 10 days. I note that over 1 month has now elapsed since the breach, and yet we're still being asked to be patient to respond to your request. We might think about directing VA to provide these timelines by the end of close of business today. Maybe we should consider, ask them that they be prepared independently, have them signed under a perjury clause, witnessed and sealed by the Inspector General. We should have these timelines not only from the panel that we met with on May 25th, but also from the witnesses scheduled for tomorrow. I think it's time to send a message that we have been patient long enough. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah.
Mr. Filner, all members may have opening statements will be submitted for the record, and I thank the gentleman for bringing that issue back to the chair's attention. I note that sitting in the audience is the deputy secretary, and if you could make sure that someone has that prepared, any questions on it, please be in touch with the staff director, and if you could bring that with you tomorrow and submit to the committee. Someone, I'm sure, has been working on it, and I think that's probably the best way to handle that. Mr. Filner, would that be acceptable? All right. Shouldn't be any problem with that, should there? Okay. All right. With this panel, we have an Army veteran, Robert McFarland. He served in the Vietnam War. He was nominated by President George W. Bush to serve as the Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology in the Department of Veterans Affairs on October 15, 2003, and was confirmed by the Senate on January 22, 2004. Prior to his appointment, he served as Vice President of Government Relations for Dell Computer Corporation. Mr. McFarland left the Department of Veterans Affairs on May 18, 2006. We'll also hear testimony from Dr. John Goss. Served 32 years in the United States Navy. Following his retirement, Rear Admiral Goss was nominated by the President and confirmed by the Senate to serve as the Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology and Chief Information Officer for the Department of Veterans Affairs from August 2001 through June 2003. Rear Admiral Goss transitioned from government service to the private sector, accepting a senior position with Science Application International Corporation in September of 2003. His primary focus at this company was the Olympic C-41 security project, considered critical for safe and successful 2004 Summer Olympic Games in Athens, Greece. In January 2005, Admiral Goss founded Goss Consulting Services, and in February 2006, he joined FGM Incorporated as the company's president. We'll also hear testimony from Lieutenant General. Which do you want? General Howard is the Acting Assistant Secretary for Information Technology and Acting Chief Information Officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs. We'll also hear from Mr. Brandewey. He currently serves as the Director, Defense Manpower Data Center, Field Activity Reporting to the Office of the Secretary of Defense, Personnel and Readiness. He is responsible for the oversight of the largest and most comprehensive automated personal data base in DOD, management of a dozen major operational DOD programs, supervision of a multidisciplinary staff of approximately 800. Recently, he led the DMDC efforts to redesign the department's medical benefits and entitlements database for the new TRICARE system, to design and field a comprehensive web authentication capability for the Department of Defense to develop and field an identification card and biometric-based force protection system now widely deployed throughout the world, and to design and develop and field the Common Access Smart Card as the new DoD identification card. Currently, more than 10 million have been issued. Pronounce it Brisson? Brisson. Monsieur Debouillet will pronounce it Brisson. Jim Brisson is the Vice President of Gartner Consulting, where he was the managing partner for U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs within Gartner's USA Federal Consulting Practice. He's based in Arlington, Virginia, and his responsibilities for Gartner Consulting involve business development, associate development, and engagement delivery. We look forward to your testimony, and we will start with you, Dr. Admiral Goss. Which do you want, Doctor, Admiral, Secretary?
John is fine, sir.
All right, John, proceed. If all of you have written testimony?
Yes, sir.
All of you do? Even Mr. McFarland, do you not?
That's not. He's here for the questions.
So, Mr. Brandwee, Dr. Goss, Major General Howard, and Mr. Brisson, all of you have written testimony. We submitted for the record, hearing no objections, so ordered. You're now recognized, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, and members of the committee. Thank you for inviting me here today to discuss the important issues related to the Department of Veterans Affairs Information Technology Reorganization efforts. I'd like to provide the committee with some background information to help in understanding the thought process that goes into the remarks that follow. At the time of my confirmation hearing, as the VA's Chief Information Officer, the Department was faced with many challenges, including an ever-expanding IT budget, programs that were defined in a stovepipe manner due to the lack of an enterprise architecture, programs that were consistently overrunning budget, behind schedule, failing to meet their performance parameters. The Department was faced with implementing a comprehensive cybersecurity program and having to implement an executive oversight process, which was a recurring deficiency in many GAO audits. As a result of the above, and as presented in my opening statement before the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee on 2 August 2001 during my confirmation hearing, I stated that I had five strategic objectives. First, complete the enterprise architecture roadmap for the future. Two, integrate the disparate telecommunications networks to improve performance and responsiveness for our veterans. Three, implement a strong information security program and infrastructure. Four, create a program and project management process to oversee and help information technology program managers deliver products that meet requirements, are delivered on time, and stay within budget. And finally, establish information technology metrics to continuously measure our ability to meet our veterans' needs. Although implementing a strong information security program is listed as number three in the above list, it was my number one priority. Establishing a comprehensive enterprise architecture and integrating the telecommunications networks were placed higher in the order since I believe they are prerequisites to attacking the cybersecurity problem. During my 32 years in the Navy, I learned to address organizational issues by using the following simple thought process. First, define the problem to be solved. Second, define the optimal yet affordable solution to the problem. Three, define what work should be accomplished by government and what work should be performed by industry, and then organize to implement. Given the problems and strategic objectives defined above, I concluded three things. First, all IT programs and IT-related activities affecting the three administrations and the central office should be centrally managed at the department level, with funding located in the departments and not the administration's budgets. Specifically, enterprise architecture, cybersecurity, telecommunications networks, corporate data centers, any program with the above characteristic that would result from developing a comprehensive enterprise architecture, such as VA-wide registration and eligibility and a central call center, And finally, all IT programs under the auspices of any VA central office code. Second, all development activities related to individual administration IT programs should be managed at the department level and funded from the administration budget, because they're the ones who have the business requirement for the program. And third, the operations and maintenance of in-service IT systems directly related to mission execution within an administration should be managed by that administration, subject to a comprehensive budget and funding execution approval process, with ultimate authority for approving the expenditure of funds residing in the office of the CIO. I recognize that the above conclusions are not consistent with current thinking, but I would respectfully ask the committee to consider the following. Without a central management of the development activities, how will the department ever implement a comprehensive enterprise-wide enterprise architecture to eliminate duplication, to cross-functionally integrate the business processes, and ultimately slow or stop the growth of the department's IT budget? I hope this information will help the committee in its deliberations. Thank you for the opportunity. I stand ready to answer questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. McFarland, you're now recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Although I have no prepared statement, I have had the privilege to appear before this committee on many occasions over the last 2+ years. Our discussions have always been frank, and I have appreciated this committee's support in my previous efforts to bring the VA's information technology infrastructure into the 21st century. I'm honored to be here today and would be pleased to answer any questions this committee may have regarding my experiences while Assistant Secretary and CIO at the Department.
Oh. You sound like a man that's been at a trout stream.
Explain it to the city guys.
Explain it to a city guy?
Yeah.
Well, you know, he worked at the department for a long time. He took a break. He got jammed while he was there for a while. He went to a trout stream to gather his mind. And we've pulled him back to Washington, D.C., not too excited about being back in Washington, D.C. And he says, I'll show up, but that doesn't mean I have to give a statement. And if you want to ask any questions of me, go right ahead.
Thank you, sir.
So that sounds like a man with a clear mind that's been to a trout stream.
All right, now I get it. Thank you.
Is that about right, Mr. McFarland?
That's pretty close, sir.
All right. All right, thank you. General Howard, you're now recognized.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, good morning. Thank you for your invitation to discuss the Department of Veterans Affairs Information Technology Reorganization Plan and the recent data loss incident. First, a short update on the VA IT realignment. The VA IT system model has been developed and approved. The key focus is to transition the IT community to operate within a management system that separates the development and operations and maintenance domains. VA will establish required business practices and processes that harmonize the oversight and budgetary responsibilities of the Office of the CAO, the functionality of the domains, and business relationships of the IT service provider and the customer for all IT activities across the entire VA. As background, in an executive decision memo dated October 19, 2005, the Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs approved the concept of a new IT management system for the VA. This decision to move to a new management construct was made to correct long-standing deficiencies in the current decentralized IT management system. The concept separates the IT community into two domains, an operation and maintenance domain that is the responsibility of the Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology, and a smaller application development domain that is the responsibility of the administrations and staff offices. Although the domains are separated, the VA CIO will retain oversight responsibilities for all VA IT projects. As Secretary Nicholson testified at the House Appropriations Committee hearing yesterday, the long-range plan is to also centralize the application development domain under the CIO. The new VA IT management system will clearly enhance the department's ability to strengthen the protection of sensitive information, with all information security officers reporting to the CIO under this new management system. The CIO will be able to, one, create and operate the agency-wide information security program, two, establish information security policies and procedures and control techniques for the agency, which, when followed, will ensure compliance with all of the above requirements. Three, to train and oversight personnel and, train and oversee personnel with significant responsibilities for information security. And finally, assist senior agency officials concerning their information security responsibilities, including the analysis process. The VA IT system model was developed as a framework for the future IT management system. The principal elements of the model include the following: definitions of the roles, responsibilities, and initial boundaries between the operations and maintenance domain and the application development domain. And this includes determination of business needs and priorities. Although the domains are separated, the model prescribes procedures between the domains in order to provide the CIO with oversight and budget responsibilities for all VA IT projects. It also provides the authority, delegation of authority, and governance structure and process for the conduct of all VA IT-related business. The model also contains key IT service delivery business process flows and sample scenarios to illustrate how domain activities are coordinated by these process flows. These flows must be clearly defined to reflect the critical interdependence of business applications and the performance of the IT infrastructure. Finally, the model contains a recommended to-be organization for the Office of the CIO designed to balance the tactical needs of operating a complex infrastructure as a shared service with the strategic needs of aligning IT resources to best meet the mission requirements of the department. Transitioning now to the recent data loss incident, as you are aware, the Secretary initiated several recent actions to tighten our privacy and data security programs. On May 24th, the Data Security Assessment and Strengthening of Controls Program was established to provide a high priority and much more focused effort to strengthen our data privacy and security procedures. The two principal objectives of this program are to, first, reduce the risk of a reoccurrence of incidents such as the recent data loss, and second, to remedy the material weakness reported by the Inspector General. There are three phases to this effort: assessment, strengthening of controls, and enforcement. We are almost through the assessment phase and have actions underway in the other two phases as well. On May 26th, the Secretary issued a directive that requires the top leadership to instruct all VA managers, supervisors, and team leaders of their duty and responsibility to protect sensitive and confidential information. In this memo, the Secretary also announced that he had convened a task force of VA senior leaders to review all aspects of information security and make recommendations to strengthen our protection of sensitive information. One of the first tasks of this group is to complete an inventory of all positions requiring access to sensitive VA data and to complete that by the end of June. This past Monday, we began a security awareness week at all VA facilities. We are emphasizing training and privacy and cybersecurity for all employees. We require all VA employees, contractors, and volunteers to complete both cybersecurity and privacy training annually. Normally, employees are required to complete this training by September 30th of each year. However, given the recent incident, the Secretary has directed that this be accomplished by the end of June. We will be conducting a department-wide inventory of laptops, to ensure that they carry the encryption and other cybersecurity software necessary to ensure remote access users are operating in a safe and secure environment. This effort is on hold, however, due to several class action lawsuits. It will continue once legal clearance is obtained. Finally, we are reviewing all policies, directives, and handbooks relating to privacy, cybersecurity, and records management to ensure they are accurate, clear, and focused. All of these efforts will provide for a more secure environment for sensitive data used in the VA. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my statement. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today.
Thank you much. Mr. Randwey, you're now recognized.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today to discuss the data exchanges between the Department of Defense and the Department of Veterans Affairs. Our center is a central repository of automated human resource information in the Department of Defense, and we have been actively engaged with the DVA on most of the personnel information flowing between the two departments. These exchanges are very basic to providing an improved experience for the veteran and also for coordination of benefits between the two departments. It's important to note these exchanges have been ongoing for more than 25 years. The purpose of the data exchanges between DVA and DOD are twofold: to provide information to the DVA on currently serving and recently separated individuals who are eligible for DVA benefits and services, and to competently administer programs in both agencies that benefit service members, former service members, and their families. These data exchanges can be categorized as follows: data for administering educational benefits, active duty and selected reserve Montgomery GI Bill; data for administering insurance programs, specifically Veterans Group Life Insurance; data for epidemiological studies and for assessing post-war illnesses; data for coordination of benefits and prevention of fraud, waste, and abuse; and data to estimate veteran population and expedite delivery of benefits. Data exchanges with the VA, although long-standing, have expanded in breadth in recent years, and an effort to consolidate the exchanges began in earnest about 3 years ago. Close cooperation and increased exchanges of information have also received encouragement from the Congress and the administration. For example, the President's management agenda directed efforts to make the transition from DOD to the DVA seamless. And I quote, "Transition should be seamless from the veteran's perspective and could be made seamless through data sharing between VA and DOD, as well as within VA." Public Law 108-136 established an interagency committee known as the DVA-DOD Joint Executive Council to direct joint coordination and data sharing efforts between the two departments. DOD believes there is great value to current service members and veterans in the close cooperation evidenced by these data exchanges that is developed between DOD and the Department of Veterans Affairs. However, it is equally important that the exchanges are done with the utmost attention to security to ensure no unauthorized disclosure of information. The DVA has been a partner with us in the implementation of secure transfer between the two agencies. In that regard, we have continued to improve that process and add security to this data transfer process. My organization did the work to assess the impact of the recent data breach on currently serving active duty, reserve, and guard members. We continue to work on mitigation efforts with respect to the compromised information. In spite of this tragic loss, it is important to reinforce the point there are many benefits the current data exchanges between the two departments. They are done securely, and they result in better service and better benefit delivery for service members and veterans. Mr. Chairman, I thank the committee for the opportunity to report on data exchanges between DOD and DVA and would welcome the opportunity to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. We have another vote, just one vote. It's a procedural vote. So we're going to have to stand in recess for about 7 minutes, and we'll return. All right, hearing will come back to order. Chair now recognizes Mr. Brisson for his statement.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to participate in today's hearing regarding the Department of Veterans Affairs Information Technology Reorganization Plan and VA's decision to pursue the federated model. I'm a managing partner within the consulting division at Gartner, the leading provider of research and analysis on the global IT industry. I'm accompanied today by my colleague, Joe Clark, director with Gartner Consulting, who is the lead subject matter expert in the methodologies we employed in our most recent consulting engagement for the VA. Unlike many of our competitors, Gartner does not offer IT systems or software implementation services that would compromise our independence and objectivity. It is our objectivity combined with our past performance at the VA that was the basis for Gartner Consulting being selected to convert our originally recommended centralized model to a federated model at VA leadership's direction. I was the lead consultant for this effort. In December 2005, the Assistant Secretary for IT directed Gartner Consulting to determine the best approach to implement a federated model, for VA. Our focus was on ensuring that the VA's federated model would yield a blueprint for implementation that incorporated the seven critical dimensions to achieving a higher performing IT organization at the VA. Those seven dimensions are: one, organizational structure, the structure in which the IT organization delivers value at a risk level that is tolerable to the department and best supports its one VA mission. Two, processes, the critical IT processes, their interfaces, and their dependencies required for IT delivery across the department. Three, roles, the IT management practices, responsibilities, and accountabilities required for IT delivery, what VA associates need to do to deliver IT value. Four, IT services, the necessary IT capabilities that are valued and readily understood by the VA's business community, not just the IT community. Five, guiding principles, the IT policies that establish focus, governance, and a decision-making fabric within and between VA's IT and business communities. Six, performance management, the definition of IT performance objectives and success criteria, and high-level analysis of IT performance relative to peers in government, insurance, and healthcare delivery. Seven, culture and norms, the changes required in the underlying culture and norms to affect improved IT management behaviors. In my written testimony, I have provided details about how Gartner Consulting derived roles and responsibilities and simulated scenarios to illustrate for VA's consideration how the federated approach would work within VA's environment. It is important to note, as we have in our intermittent engagements with the VA, that organizational structure alone is not the silver bullet. It is just one dimension of necessary change to the existing IT organization at VA. There is a tendency for government agencies to want to jump straight to organizational structure alone when seeking to initiate and drive change. Encouraging desirable IT management behavior is less about structure and is more about relentless focus on strategy and execution. Gartner research and our engagement results indicate that the VA must allow for a balance between line of business autonomy and common enterprise-wide needs. VA's desired end state is not small change. It will require overt, firm, sustained action and persistent messaging supportive of the change from all levels of leadership across the department. What will be critical is sustaining the focus of executive leadership in seeing this change through and realizing improved IT performance. Whether VA leadership will achieve the desired end state in an expeditious manner may be less important than whether they are able to successfully institutionalize the federated IT management system. I firmly believe that VA leadership is taking the right steps forward. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, and members of the committee, this concludes my statement. Thank you again for the opportunity to discuss such an important matter to support our veterans. I would be pleased to respond to any questions that you or other members of the committee may have at this time.
Well, I'd like to pick up right where you left off. I firmly believe the VA is now taking the right steps. You have to reconcile that. You have to reconcile that with the testimony that Gartner Consulting gave into this committee in your recommendation for a centralized model that was stiff-armed by the VA. You are a consultant to the VA, are you not?
We have been a consultant on occasion to the VA. We are.
Are you a consultant to the VA right now?
We are currently not under engagement with the VA.
Okay. And were you hired in as a consultant to the VA with regard to the federated approach and its implementation?
Yes, we were.
Uh-huh. Do you anticipate future work with the VA?
I would like to anticipate future work with the VA, yes, sir. Uh-huh.
And would your future anticipation of work with the VA have anything to do with your last statement before
this
meeting?
Not at all, sir. Not at all.
Then reconcile your testimony, sir.
Okay. I believe, as I said earlier, that organizational structure is one dimension. The work that we did in converting the model that was recommended last spring, 2005 that is, to the federated model, dove down deep into processes, roles, services, principles, performance management, and culture and norms. And in constructing that model, we identified for the VA what path forward they should take in order to make this adhere in their environment. And I believe that from that model, they are stepping toward that direction, heeding what we advise them to do.
Does Gartner Consulting as a company still stand by its recommendation in the United States Congress that the VA have a centralized model for IT management?
We do stand by that, sir.
In your written testimony to the committee, I note that you have a quote in here. Given the poor state of the VA's IT investment management process and the stated demand to drive benefits over a shorter horizon, we recommended the centralization option to maximize the opportunity to create value for our veterans. You stand by that statement today?
Yes, we do, sir.
Okay. Now, Gartner has given this statement, calls it the poor state of VA's IT investment management. Well, now I'm going to turn to Dr. Goss and Mr. McFarland. Can you explain to me why Gartner Consulting would call it a poor state of investment management when, in fact, both of you were the managers?
Mr. Chairman, I really have no idea why that finding was uncovered. I can speak to the time between July of 2001 and June of 2003. When I first became CIO, our capital investment control process for IT was poor. And with a focused effort and working with the Office of Management and Budget, within 1 year, we turned around our process from a budget submission to OMB of about a 5% first pass acceptance to about a 95% first pass acceptance. And after I departed VA, there was a substantial gap before Mr. McFarland became CIO. And during that interval, I know I don't know what went on at VA, and I'm not sure whether Mr. McFarland does.
Mr. Farland, what are your thoughts with regard to that statement?
Sir, I believe that we continued the Enterprise Information Board environment that Dr. Goss started, which was to review the individual development projects and sustainment projects. But our biggest issue was not making the decisions over which investments were good investments, although where I came from, we dealt with ROI, which is a difficult thing to do in the government because it is not the same as it is in the private sector. But what we had a problem with was the use of the funds. And this, as you know, is something I was focused on for quite a while, which was to change the budget environment. So when you look at the, when you use the words poor state of investment management, I think what Gartner was trying to say is that you may pass at an executive level a project spend plan and a project budget, and then the dissemination of that money and the use of that money in many cases was literally not being able to be tracked and followed through the chain as it's used out in the field. And I think that, to me, was the area where I felt the investment management process was failing in the budget itself, in the expense of the money, because we were never sure that the money was spent on exactly what it had been appropriated for. And to me, that, I think, is what Gartner was trying to say when they said part of the issue of poor investment management process.
To Mr. Rahsaan, I want you to know that we recognize that a movement to cure is more than just about structure. We recognize that.
Yes,
but we also have painfully recognized over the years, and we have embraced the testimony that Gartner had given to this committee and the counsel that they gave to the VA prior to their judgment on which option to choose. The reason we do focus on structure and lines of authority is that as we do the forensics here of trying to put this together in understanding what went wrong, we can't move to cure until we create the right structure with the proper lines of authority so that we know who has authority to do what, who has the tools to do what. And so that's kind of why we're focusing on those kinds of things at the moment. We recognize culture and many other things that you had also had testified to. The ROI mentality, Mr. Farland, that you brought to the VA, we have no objections to that at all. Because we, looking out at the interest of taxpayers, had to deal with the pains that you did with regard to the core FLS and the VetsNet. And there's a reason that we here in Congress wanted the development side under the authority, under your gentlemen's authorities. And we understand that that's been, they fight against that. And we recognize that there are crucibles out there for initiative and that your job's not to say no to that, but just to make sure that it's all compliant under the one architecture. Gentlemen, we are considering many things in our packages. So what I'd like to do here today, we want to do some forensics, we want your opinion on cure. What are your thoughts that if we were to, in our package, we are to elevate the position of the CIO to an undersecretary? Mr. McFarland?
I would think that would be a good move, sir. I believe that in this day and age, the VA, like any other agency, simply can't do business for its veterans without an IT infrastructure.
And then if we make the CISO a deputy secretary, right under the CIO as an undersecretary.
You mean assistant secretary, sir?
Or assistant secretary, right. Yes.
I certainly would applaud those moves because I think that the infrastructure that runs the VA today in its current state is an IT infrastructure, and it's important enough that, given the past history, that those moves would certainly help. It would give the CIO an equal seat at the table with the main administrations to be able to provide the service that keeps the business running.
Admiral Goss?
Mr. Chairman, I think your idea is an excellent one, and if I may, I've been associated in management positions in the last 14 years of government service where I've had the opportunity to observe how chief information officers can be effective not only at the Department of Veterans Affairs, but in other parts of government as well. Without the chief information officer being elevated to the status of undersecretary, or undersecretary equivalent. The CIO does not have a seat at the table at any department within government, and the founders are the people who created the Clinger-Cohen Act will continue to be disappointed in results until such a bold action is taken. I would highly endorse your suggestion, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Filner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for putting together this panel. I learned a lot today. Mr. Chairman, you said you can't move to a cure unless certain steps were taken, and I would include in those steps at least a recognition of the problem and get out of a sense of denial. Every time Mr. Howard referred to what happened on May 3rd, the incident, I don't know if you've been out in the field talking to veterans, but they are scared to death. You got 26 million or more people worried about identity theft. We've had testimony here that if it was a professional has the data, and there are some circumstances about the theft that may lead to that conclusion, it may be a year before they even know that their identity has been stolen. So we have a major disaster here. And until you guys start calling it that, I don't think we're going to get the kind of response that we need. So I hope you folks in the front row there will take that message back to the secretary that if he's in a state of denial still, although, I don't know, it took a week to hear the other news, maybe he won't get this message by tomorrow. Dr. Goss, you started, your opening sentence was quite an indictment of the situation. Could you just read that for me again, or did you have that written out?
Yes, sir. At the time of my confirmation hearing?
Before that. I think it was the first sentence. You outlined the situation as you saw what was...
Yes, sir. That was at the time of my confirmation hearing, the department was faced with an ever-expanding IT budget, programs that were defined in a stovepipe manner due to the lack of an enterprise architecture, programs that were consistently overrunning budget, behind schedule, and failing to meet their performance requirements, was faced with implementing a comprehensive cybersecurity program and having to institute executive-level oversight process as a result of a recurring theme of GAO reports.
I'd like to ask a very generalized set of questions that maybe several of you can respond to. That's a cultural indictment. I'd like to know if it still exists as you see it. Mr. McFarland, has it changed? Why hasn't it changed? What did you think of the Pollyanna statement by Mr. Howard? Everything's changed, and we're moving forward. And I might just for Dr. Goss, I wasn't at the hearing, but I think at one hearing where Chairman Booyer said to you, "Would you like to have centralized line control of the system?" And I guess you were, you had to say no at that time. I don't know if that was your personal opinion or OMB's opinion, because I think they had to approve your statements here. But if you can go back from that statement, and has anything changed since you've left? Is Mr. Howard's statement sound right to you? And what needs to be changed for it to come true? Please, and Mr. McFarland, if he can. Get him off the trout stream there.
Okay. Let's see. I'm really not qualified to discuss what has happened recently, because my knowledge of what has happened is what I've read in the newspaper and in preparing for this hearing, material that I found on the VA website.
But you were there for a couple years.
Yes, sir.
So did it change while you were there? I mean,
during that time,
you mentioned one major thing, but
for the record, sir, all of the testimony that I gave in front of this committee was my testimony. It was the truth. I was not influenced by OMB or my senior.
They didn't have to be approved?
I'm sure it had to be approved, but I held no punches, and I spoke to you.
We did have testimony at an earlier hearing of one of, I think, your successors, Mr. Brody, right, who said, and because I asked him, he said that that's, he couldn't say what he wanted to say because it was approved by OMB. So I've just, that seemed to be the procedure.
I stand by today.
Okay, thank you.
The testimony that I gave in front of the subcommittee at the hearings for which I participated. Now, from a cultural perspective.
But why did you say, did I get that right, that you said no to Mr. Booyer when he said, would you like to have the centralized control?
I believe that in my answer, I qualified it along the terms of what I had in my opening statement, that I felt that the development activities should be centralized. The CIO should have the authority over all development activities, but that the operations and maintenance of the products that were deployed to the field should still be distributed within the administrations. And, a little bit of the background, we all are an invention of our past, and having served for 32 years in the Navy, I look at the model that's proposed today, and it equates to allowing commanding officers to develop their command and control capability, but yet to operate it, maintain it, and fix it, you have to go back to the Pentagon. And somehow that just doesn't seem right based on my experience. As far as the culture goes, there were cultural impediments at VA that precluded making progress while I was there. Specifically, at the executive level, there was commitment to have reform, but there was not commitment to affect the type of change necessary to make that reform. When you find you're broke, the processes and procedures you operate under aren't going to fix you. Because if they would, you wouldn't be broke in the first place. So change was fundamental. But the attitude was, fix it within the current process. Second, the VA concurrence process is onerous. In my testimony in September of 2002, I talked about a memo the Secretary had signed in August directing the centralization of IT activities. I testified in front of the subcommittee that we put a team together to build the plan and it would go to the Secretary by November of 2002. That did not happen. It took until May to get it done because the VA concurrence process waters everything down to the lowest common denominator in which people can agree. Mm-hmm. I was told one time I could not offer a differing view because nothing goes to the Secretary without the principals concurring. And three, the financial management of the programs. The money is distributed into the administration budgets, at least it was during the 2 years I was there, for such things as enterprise architecture, cybersecurity, the data networks, all of the infrastructure things needed to run, the machinery needed to run the IT at the department and for the administrations. And it was left to my office to have to get the money from the administrations in the year of execution. The budgets should reflect the execution because at the end of the day, the real organization follows the flow of the money. And with the money spread in execution, it is very difficult to get the resources one needs to execute the job.
Thank you. That was pretty clear. Mr. McFarland, would you concur? Do you have anything to add to that?
I do concur with Dr. Goss on the state of what he left was pretty much what I found when I got there. I believe the VA has moved forward in doing some things that will make the job easier. With the help of this committee and Congress, there is now a consolidated budget, although I would tell you that I was disappointed that the budget contained only non-pay dollars and not the full budget. I'll be frank about that. That does allow better oversight over the spend. There is now, under this federated model, at least in a consolidation of the infrastructure. And where I might disagree with Dr. Goss a little bit, I do believe that the infrastructure has to be consolidated, because I believe that if you don't consolidate the infrastructure under the CIO, then all you will do is be involved with directives and guidelines over policy of privacy and security. Without control of that infrastructure, technical control of that infrastructure, you cannot ensure that the environment is safe. So I would disagree. I believe the infrastructure should be consolidated, and that not only all those assets need to be under a single control.
Mr. Howard, are you heading in that direction or not?
Sir, with respect to the operations and maintenance domain, we are. And as I indicated in my testimony.
Wait. He just said something very clear. He said control of the infrastructure.
Yes, sir.
Is that what you're talking about or not?
With respect to the operations and maintenance infrastructure, that is
well,
correct. The data centers.
Well, but he wasn't restricting it like you are. I mean, he didn't have any qualification over infrastructure. What other part of the infrastructure there is? Development?
Development is not included in the
why not?
IT organization well, but, that has currently been approved.
Yeah, that's the point, Mr. Howard. I'm saying, should it be in that? Mr. McFarland, did you include what he said, operations, maintenance, and development in the consolidated structure?
Under the current plan.
I don't even talk the language you do, so I'm trying to get that.
I understand. Infrastructure to me does not include development. Infrastructure is the basic assets and people necessary to provide the IT service to the community. In the current federated model, that infrastructure is supposed to be consolidated under the CIO. And the administrations and staff offices become users of that infrastructure. I strongly believe you cannot allow the infrastructure to be managed by administrations and staff offices.
So what's the difference then between explain to me the difference of federated model and the centralized model. I mean, what is included in one and not the other?
The difference under the Gartner scenarios that were developed is only one issue, that the applications development, the development of new products to serve the needs of veterans in each of the administrations and staff offices, whether it be a financial system or whether it be a medical system, the development of those products, application development, is done in the federated model by the administrations. Everything else is managed by the CIO.
In a
centralized model, all of that would be managed by the CIO. And what would happen would be the staff offices and the administrations would provide the specifications and requirements for their needs to the CIO, who would then go to the marketplace and develop those products for them.
And you agree that that's okay? We got word directly from the secretary about what Mr. Howard should say, so maybe you should read the note for us, Mr. Howard.
Mr. McFarland, to be responsive to the question, I think it would be that do you concur with the centralized model that development should be under the authorities of the CIO? I think that's where Mr. Villner is getting to.
I have been on record from day one as being preferring the centralized model. I have agreed to support the federated model when I was in office because that was the recommendation of the agency, and it was candidly the best I could get.
And give me again, as concise as you can, why you defined the federated, and you gave us a clear explanation, but why would you prefer the centralized? I mean, what did it do that the other one didn't?
I believe you have to have control over development.
Well, that's what I asked you at the beginning, and you said no. I asked you what did consolidation of infrastructure meant, and you said operation maintenance but not development. Now you're saying development should be.
Let me define infrastructure for you, sir. Infrastructure is the assets and people that provide IT services,
okay,
that provide the electrons to anyone who uses those electrons, your email, your whatever, no matter whether you're a doctor, a benefits coordinator, or whatever, the users of those workstations. That's the infrastructure. The development of product is actually the generation of new code,
all right,
to run applications.
But you should, and both should be under this, the CIO. The CIO, is that in your preference?
It has been my professional, okay, opinion that they should be consolidated, okay, under one environment.
And so, and they're going in a different direction than that, right now.
They are using, right, the That's federated all. Model. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Bilirakis, just as a follow-up, if I may, Mr. Rahsaan, Gartner Consulting, you're a consultant to the leading top 100 companies in the world, are you not?
Yes, sir.
Are there any of these companies that you're a consultant to in the world, of these companies, ever take the development side outside the, to take the development outside the authority of the CIO?
Indeed there are, yes, sir. And I think one of the nuances to the federated model, as it may exist in commercial and outside of public sector, is that while development may remain outside the CIO's control, in order for those products to run on the infrastructure, they still must pass through the wickets and be certified to run on that infrastructure. So there is a transfer.
Thank you. Mr. Bilirakis.
Well, Mr. Chairman, virtually everything's kind of been covered on a detailed basis. If this continues on, it's just going to continue to make work for us and take us away from being concerned about health care and about claims processing and things of this nature. Somewhere along the line, it's got to be solved. Let me ask, my impression is that all testimony, it goes all the way back, not just this administration, the prior administration before that, all testimony before coming before Congress has to go to OMB, is that correct? Do anybody know? That's true, right? Okay, so this is not something that's new. Dr. Gosch, you prepared your testimony. Of course, obviously, OMB doesn't tell you what to respond to when you're asked questions from the panel up here. But you prepared your testimony for today, and then there's a process. What went up the line, did it, up through the second? No? Where did your testimony go?
As a private citizen.
Well, you're a private citizen, right. Sure. All right, I'm going to go to General Howard. Forgive me for doing this. Getting a good opportunity for this old staff sergeant to talk to a Major General.
Has to go through OMB, sir.
Has to go. All right. But does it go up the line through the VA first before
yes,
it goes
sir.
To OMB?
Yes, sir, it does.
It
General
does,
Counsel.
Right? Do you like that as a former general officer?
Sir, it was probably the same way in the Pentagon, although I can't
yeah, I'll
remember.
Bet. I'll bet.
But that is the process.
Uh-huh. You know, what is happening here is we've got a Veterans Administration that I've always had very high regard for. When I came to Congress 24 years ago, there was one committee that I specifically fought for. I don't guess I didn't have to fight too very hard, but the point is I wanted to get to the VA committee, and I did 24 years ago, first day one. When Mr. Booyer may not know this, but when we came up, our side came up with this idea of grading committees, certain committees considered A committees, B committees, C committees. The rule was that if you had an A committee, you could not serve in any other committee. And B, the Veterans Committee was considered other than an A committee. Energy and Commerce was considered an A committee. And the deal was if you wanted to stay on an A committee, you had to give up any other committees. I let it be known that I would be glad to give up Energy and Commerce if I could keep the Veterans Committee. That's how much I feel about this committee. That's why I get awfully frustrated and angry sometimes when we get partisan here and throw stones at each other, which is something we did not used to do in this committee. But that's beside the point. The point here is that activity like this, promises made to Congress on record and whatnot and not kept on what, the contract on IT was to be awarded June the 10th and contract work was to be started on June the 15th of this year of 06, when in fact that has not taken place. That's the result of testimony before this committee back in March of this year. Other things, we've gone through hearing after hearing. We've had roundtable discussions, everything on IT, and still don't see very much progress being made. I mean, that hurts the image of the Veterans Administration. And, we'd like to hear from the veterans' complaints about maybe health care, about their claims or something of that nature. And what we're hearing is they're concerned about privacy and the lack of privacy, and they're concerned about what might happen to their personal situation as a result of what's transpired. Mr. McFarland, you came aboard with a heck of a background, a tremendous IT background. You were given a certain responsibility. Was your background respected in the VA? Now, you should be free to respond here.
Yes, sir. I never got a feeling that my background was not respected. I felt I brought a business acumen to the VA, which I think was somewhat new, and I think it was respected, certainly in the beginning. I'm not sure.
In the beginning? What happened after, today? What happened after the beginning?
Well, I think whenever you embark on change, you're going to run into culture. I've said many times I didn't believe that a majority of the issues at VA were so much about technology as they were about culture. It is a long-standing history of decentralized management. And when you bring a business acumen that says you want to centralize many of those management functions, I think you run into cultural problems. But that being said, I don't think anyone disrespected my my background. I never had anybody when I chastise me for it.
Yeah. So, no, I don't think anybody would have done that, but I'm not referring to that, obviously. I'm referring to, were you paid attention to, were you taken seriously in terms of some of the changes as a result of your actual background and experience and that sort of thing?
Oh, I think I was taken very seriously, sir. On many occasions. I don't think it was ever an issue of taking me seriously. It was the problem was the disagreement over the change.
All right. So you were taken seriously, but there were disagreements. So people disagreed with you. Yeah. General Howard, here we are, and the chairman's idea of legislation basically upgrading the CIO position and whatnot is a good idea. But here we are trying to micromanage. And damn it, we should not be doing that. And yet we feel that we almost have to. The questions that have been asked are detailed type questions, for crying out loud. We shouldn't have to be concerned with something like that, I don't think. And yet we are, because we see a process that just is not moving. It's not progressing the way it should be. And then, of course, these errors, such as the loss of those files. General Howard, your testimony had to be cleared, but your responses to us are not cleared, do not have to be cleared.
No, sir, that's correct.
All right. Now, you're a general officer. Are we going to fix this? I mean, Mr. McFarland mentioned the word culture. He knew darn well that I was going to mention culture because I talked about it constantly during our past hearings. There's a culture there. There's a turf thing there. That exists up here, too, and I'm the first one to admit that. That's if I had to say the one thing that bothers me about the Congress is the turf fighting and the committee's jurisdictions and things of that nature. What do you think? Are we on the right path here? What are we going to fix this? Are we going to be as proud of the VA in terms of IT as we are on their work on health care. And the Spinal Cord Injury Center, for instance, Haley Hospital in Tampa, there is a young lady here with Pfizer who lives down in that area and who volunteers there one day a week. And as I went out to vote, she was boasting to me about the great work that they do. I mean, there's a lot of pride there. But the pride does not exist as far as IT is concerned. Respond to that.
Sir, there is, first of all, no question that this can be fixed. Obviously, we can't predict the future. But in my mind...
What do you mean by that?
You said, will we fix it? We yeah. can fix it, and we are heading in the right direction. There's no question about that. The issue regarding centralization is still, you know, full centralization, that is, including the development domain, is still on the table. But I think based on the Secretary's testimony yesterday, that also will be centralized. And he went public with that yesterday during the appropriations hearing. I think that's a very important aspect of it. Can we do it right away? My personal opinion is we shouldn't. We're already very deep into moving the operations and maintenance and consolidating that. In the contract you referred to, you are correct. That was delayed, you know, due to contracting procedures. But that is ready to be signed. If it's not signed today, it will be in the next few days, to bring in the contractor who's going to help us further refine the details of the current approved IT reorganization. But as the Secretary mentioned yesterday, he is going to take the next step.
All right. Now, you said something. You mentioned the contract procedures. The delays is a result of the contract procedures. Should those procedures, in your opinion, be changed?
Sir, those are typical government procedures. It just takes time to work through that. I didn't see anything really out of line. It just took longer than we thought. I mean, we followed all of the procedures. We had written proposals. We had oral presentations in a thorough review. The last reviews that had to take place were with General Counsel and the contracting office. Those are now, you know, I got an email this morning that indicated those are complete. So there's no reason why this contract should not be signed. And that will be a very significant piece to what we're discussing today, because they will come in, this contractor will come in and help us refine the processes and procedures under which we should operate.
Are we going to pay attention to them?
So we're going to pay a lot of attention to them. And in fact of the matter is, you know, we have already detailed 4,600 people to the Office of Information and Technology. And that detail will become permanent on the 1st of October. Sir, that is an effect, as we would refer to in DOD, that's a field operating agency. That's not a staff section. That is a large number of people. And we are now in the process of organizing them, delivering the guidance. An important subset, for example, are the information security officers that exist throughout the VA. There's slightly over 300 of them. They're now under my control. You know, we are the ones that issue them instructions, that give them the training, that develop their careers, all of that. Bob McFarland didn't have that, but we do. And that alone is very helpful in terms of improving our information security.
Yeah. Well, I'm reminded by staff that this was said something like last October that it was going to take place, and here it is, June, almost July of the next year.
Yes, sir. It happened in April, sir.
In April.
That's when the detail took place. But to sort of summarize, I am fully confident that we can fix this problem. Clearly, it's an organization issue, but it's more than just moving the boxes around. As Gartner mentioned, processes are very important, and probably more important than anything else is the leadership and the emphasis we place upon the whole enterprise.
Yeah, and you, what say you, just my last question, what say you to this this culture thing that has been admitted to over a period of time in the VA?
Sir, I've been in the VA just a little over a year. I came out of the private sector. There is a culture issue, and one of the reasons for that, I think we all know that we're operating with an agency that's very decentralized, and you can't fix that overnight. I mean, that has to be done over time. We need to put more emphasis on it. But again, under Dr. Kaiser, it was deliberately decentralized, and the result of that, quite frankly, was more effective health care. I mean, it was, you know, innovation in the field and all of that. And in many ways, that's a good thing. What we probably did not do is maintain sufficient controls over that decentralization. Even in the Army, you know, we have encouraged innovation and to a degree decentralization. But you have regulations and clear directives to make sure that things are followed correctly. And one comment on directives. The business about, are we going to fix this? Sir, one first step, a major first step, is to publish very clear directives. I've only been in OINT a little over a month, and clearly that's a problem. Bob McFarlane had difficulty with that. We must, and no longer guidelines and handbooks and all of that. Our policies need to be in very clear directives with signatures on them, so that people are very clear about what they.
Yeah, now that seems natural. Why did Mr. McFarlane have trouble with it, and why do you say that it's going to be difficult? Not. I mean, why?
Sir, I don't see that difficulty anymore.
All right. Why was it?
It took us less than a week to publish 6504. In fact, the deputy secretary was a co-signature on it along with myself. And 6500 is another very critical directive that we're currently working on.
Yeah.
And there are more.
Yeah.
We cannot rely on memos and guidance that is not signed out and approved at the very high level.
Will enforcement exist?
Sir, on the enforcement part, I mentioned in my testimony that we have established an overarching program to address these issues, the data security assessment and strengthening of controls program. This is a overarching program sanctioned by the deputy secretary. We have a very detailed list of actions that must occur. In fact, we'd be happy to brief this committee at any time. We've developed, there are a lot of things that need to be done. As I mentioned to you, there were three phases to it. The last phase is enforcement. And to give you an example, I think in the area of enforcement, one of the most important things we can do is improve our audit and inspection capability. As an old Army guy, if you roll into an organization and you don't have a good inspection program, you got a problem right from the very beginning. And we don't have that right now. We have some we have the IG, of course, but within OINT, for example, it's relatively small. It's nowhere near as robust as it needs to be. And along with that capability needs to be the authority to go anywhere within the VA, knock on the door, and walk in and see what's going on. Sir, I know you're laughing, but we need that. We absolute, and it needs to be robust. And you know what I'm talking about. You're talking about unit inspection programs.
Well, you know, we had the I'm not sure why the chair is laughing. I didn't think it because he's happy. But we had testimony, was last week, from the council that you did not have the authority, the enforcement authority. Am I wrong there? Do you have it? Do you feel that you have it?
Sir, right now I have certain authority as a result of the approval of the IT reorganization up to this point. For example, in the area of information security, I own these people. I'm responsible for telling them what to do. I have the authority to discipline them. What I don't have is the authority to discipline somebody in VHA. I do have the authority to lay out the policies and regulations that must be adhered to. And if the VHA folks, for example, do not discipline someone who violates these policies, you know, then it's a matter for the 10th floor, you know, the secretariat level. Now, I will say that, so basically within what has already happened, I do have some authority. Now, with respect to additional authority, there is a memo being debated, right? Not debated. It's being finalized and reviewed by the secretary regarding further delegation of authority. It has not been signed yet. He may talk to that tomorrow. But there's more to come on that issue.
Yep. Well, I know I've taken much more time than I should have. Thank you, General, gentlemen, Mr. Chairman. We all suffer through an awful lot of frustration here. I don't know. I'll yield back whatever time I'm.
Well, Mr. Bilirakis, this is a challenge. It's been a challenge for us for a long time. And I'm smiling whenever I can hear you talk about authority. Back in 2002, Ms. Carson asked you, Dr. Goss, a direct question. Are you the man in charge? That's exactly how she asked it. And you said, yes, ma'am, it is me. It's very close. You may have been in charge, but you didn't have a lot of authority, reality. And that's what also then we learned with your successor, Mr. McFarland. He was in charge. The secretary even wrote a directive. And then that is undercut by a general counsel in his interpretation of FISMA that says that you have a responsibility, but you don't have authorities. General, reflecting upon your days in the United States Army, pretty hard for you to have received responsibility to ensure compliance, but then you have no authority to accomplish a mission. You are to take the hill. You are to ensure compliance of having taken the hill, but you have no authority to give orders to anyone. It's why I use the form heterodox, because it's totally against everything in our society. It's my challenge with the Office of the General Counsel. It's how you get to yes. How do you get to yes? You don't create these odd anomalies that then has a detrimental impact upon an organization. We figure out how we get to work together and pull in the same direction, not to create these divisions. And as someone had earlier testified to, as decentralizations of mass dispersions equate to mass dispersions in the VA. So that's why I'm smiling. I'm pleased that the VA is moving toward that direction with regard to lines of authority. I now recognize Ms. Herseth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just follow up on the line of questioning of Mr. Bilirakis and some of the comments that the chairman just made, and I appreciate the testimony that you've offered, written testimony that I had a chance to review, and some of your oral testimony today that, in light of the votes, some of us missed. But I just want to make sure that we have turned a corner and that we'll be able to confirm some of this further with the secretary tomorrow. But the chairman says, you know, how do we get to yes? It's sort of like what we say to members of our staff here in Washington or back home serving constituents. You know, it's one thing to move the ball down the field and get to the 5-yard line, but they all need to get it over the line. Okay, it's not just about getting it close, it's getting it there. And in the questions that Mr. Bilirakis posed to Mr. McFarland about how you were received, given your background, your experience when you arrived to the VA, you felt that, you know, you brought this business acumen, it was respected, but there was disagreement then based on the proposals of centralizing the IT function. And then in response to the question posed to you, General Howard, about once we get the contractor, are you going to pay attention to them? You said, yes, you're going to pay attention to them. But what if there's disagreement with how they are advising to refine the processes? Have we turned the corner to say, now that the secretary has made the decision to centralize, we've got the contractor that's going to be in place, are we behind that now? It's not about disagreement anymore. It's about simply executing and implementing the recommendations of refining the processes.
Ma'am, I can't say there'll never be disagreements. I mean, you're always likely to run into that. But my feeling right now is those have been greatly minimized.
May I interrupt? Even if there's disagreement, though, you're right, there's going to be disagreement. But despite the disagreement, are we going to just rehash the disagreement and push back on the contract about the recommendations? Or is it, you know, we disagree, but your job was to advise us, recommend, now we're going to implement the recommendations?
We have turned the corner. There's no doubt in my mind about this. Just the reassignment of people alone, including the empty spaces that have been given to us, upon the assistance of the deputy secretary, says don't just move the people, we want the spaces too, so that we can flesh out this organization in the correct manner.
Okay.
So everything that I see from our leadership is heading in the right direction. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
Okay.
But it is, to execute, is going to require very strong leadership and determination right down until when you finally take the hill, sir, you're right.
And authorities, right, General Howard? So
and,
do you feel...
And the authorities, and as I mentioned, a very important delegation memo is currently being worked. And
great. We hope to see that soon and to ask the Secretary about it tomorrow, because that was, again, a line of questioning we pursued last week with the General Counsel, who kind of, I felt, was trying to have it both ways by reiterating his interpretation of FSMA, but then talking about certain options the Secretary had to delegate certain authorities, and it was just really hard to pin him down on whether or not he was trying to allow his interpretation of FSMA to trump what these reserved powers that could be delegated from the Secretary. So I hope we've turned the corner there, that we're getting very close, that we're moving in the right direction, but not just moving in the right direction and down the field, but that delegation exists to get us to score the goal. Let me move to a different line of questioning. Mr. Brandwee, we have also in past weeks in different hearings gone into what's happening in other federal agencies. With the relative organization of the CIO, are there similar weaknesses? Are there strengths that we should be evaluating to assist us with the Department of Veterans Affairs situation? I know that the chairman has asked for a GAO investigation and report on other interpretations of FSMA by other general counsels in different agencies. And so in your statement, you note that the DMDC is at the center of most of the human resource information flowing between DOD and the Department of Veterans Affairs. Under the definition in FSMA, is DMDC considered a strategic security system?
No, ma'am, it is not. The data sources for the information that flows to the VA are not classified as national security systems.
Okay. So it doesn't contain information about security clearances and military job codes?
No, it doesn't. If I could just comment in a little more detail, the information that goes to the VA starts out very skeletal. I mean, it's just the basic identification information. It grows as events happen in a service member's life. For example, they become eligible for Montgomery GI Bill is a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Then we add information on that program and feed it to the VA. So the information that goes from DOD to VA is basic identification and then programmatic information.
Okay.
It is not national security information.
I appreciate your responses and relieves me of some of the concerns there. However, let me just ask this question. I know the chairman's interested whether, based on your responses, that it doesn't include national security information. But over the course of a service member's lifetime, as that information grows, you know, how do you feel about data sharing with an agency system plagued by such vulnerabilities as we know the Department of Veterans Affairs system has been?
Well, I mean, naturally, we're concerned. I mean, we're concerned because of the massiveness of the scale. Essentially, as came out in the data breach, a vast majority of our active duty and reserve members, this information potentially was compromised in the data breach. However, in our data use agreements with the VA, we require security evaluations be done on the recipient systems. They have been studious about doing that. I know they're re-reviewing a number of the systems right now to make sure that they are, in fact, meet the security requirements. And so we have to, in a partnership sense, rely on our partner in the VA to maintain security in the system, but we all remain concerned. One fix that we have been pursuing actually began under Admiral Goss is to consolidate the feeds that go from DOD to VA and try and minimize the kind of proliferation of data throughout the agency.
Okay.
And by concentrating that information, I think we can concentrate our efforts to make it more secure and protect it.
I agree. But I think a very important first step, especially in light of the concern that as it does get spread out more, you then have the potential of employees within the different administrations, just the potential for more possibilities of compromise, I should say. One last line of questioning, if I might pursue that, Mr. Chairman. And I think, Admiral Goss, you answered part of this question when you were talking about the VA concurrence process, and that you were told at one point within the chain of command, so to speak, in the VA, that you couldn't go to the secretary with some of your concerns unless it was consistent, unless it met these concurrence principles. And otherwise, if things got watered down to the point that some of your concerns were inconsistent with the minimum threshold of what it was watered down to, that it was hard for you to reach the secretary with those concerns. So my question is for Mr. McFarland and for you, Admiral. Last week, Bruce Brody, who was a former associate deputy assistant secretary for cyber and information security at VA, testified before the committee, and he explained that while he served in that capacity, he wasn't permitted to speak openly about many of the problems associated with VA's management of information security. So during each of your tenures as Chief Information Officer for DVA, were you ever instructed by the Secretary or other senior department officials to withhold from members of Congress any concerns you held regarding the department's information systems?
Well, let me start since Bruce worked for me first before he worked for Bob. I was never instructed, nor did I direct Bruce to withhold information from Congress. What I did, and this is me doing it, is Bruce sometimes could be quite colorful in the presentation of his issues. And sometimes the importance of his issue could be lost in the colorful flavor that he would present them. And I did ask him to tone some things down, but never to obfuscate an issue.
I appreciate the response.
If I may, on the first part,
yeah.
When I talked about the concurrence process, I did not mean to imply that I could not go to see the secretary. The process, though, required, as you lumbered your way through to get a document that could be approved, it required the concurrence. In fact, I was called once by the former deputy secretary, and he said, I need you to take your non-concurrence off. And I said, why? It's my view. And he said, well, if it goes the other way, will you support it? And I said, of course I will. And that's the only time a dissenting view got documented from my office.
I would concur with Admiral Goss on the issues. I also managed Bruce Brody, and I did see some of the colorful presentation, but he was always straightforward and given the ability to speak his mind, and never was I ever either told that I
I had to water down my opinions or could not speak, nor was I ever told not to submit anything to Congress. The concurrence process, to me, I agree with Admiral Goss, is troublesome. Unlike what I understand DOD's concurrence process to be, at the VA, there is no penalty for not meeting concurrence deadlines. And so what happens is you get the slow roll. And without having a defined, definitive concurrence deadline, such as I believe DOD has, where if you do not concur or non-concur, you do not do anything, then you opt out and have no say. Because one of the reasons you have problems in getting things done quickly is because this concurrence process takes a long time when people simply don't concur, neither non-concur or concur. The process allows non-concurrence. That's not an issue. I believe that we have moved ahead with issues at the VA, even with non-concurrence, we've moved ahead. An example would be the federated model. I didn't concur with the federated model, but I agreed to support it. So my non-concurrence on the federated model is well documented. The issue is the time frame. And this problem of slow roll, which is what happens, is what causes you the delays in many of these occurrences from happening in the time frame they should happen. And I strongly believe that that time frame should be changed. I've spoken so.
One last question then. Do you feel that the chairman's proposal to elevate the status and authority of the CIO position would be sufficient to affect the concurrent process, or do we also need, again, not that we want to micromanage, but do we also need to somehow specifically address the time frame of the concurrence process, or would elevating the position of the CIO with that type of authority make that move on its own? Would it effectuate the change on its own as opposed to independently from another proposal of the committee?
Well, I support the move, the proposed move to undersecretary status, and I think that will help. I also believe that the VA has, at the top level, competent management. And I believe competent management can deal with this issue. I don't believe, personally, that Congress should have to deal with an issue of concurrence in its timelines. People at the VA at executive level are competent. They can deal with this.
I know I've taken up a lot of time, and I appreciate that response. So may I read into your response that with the competent senior leadership at the VA, that elevating CIO to an undersecretary status would allow the competency of senior management, in addition to the individual holding the CIO position, to address the issue of the concurrence process? Because if both you and the Admiral are saying that this has been a problem because it's been taking too long, but yet you have confidence in senior management at the VA, is it just that one move of elevating the position to undersecretary status, and will it happen eventually? Because I also get the sense that you really don't think the committee should have to do anything on that front, but is there something else that needs to happen to address it effectively?
I think it will help greatly, because at an undersecretary level, that the CIO will get to sit regularly with Admiral Cooper, Dr. Perlin, Bill Turk, and discuss these issues at that level, which should ferret the problems out earlier. That's my opinion.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'd like to thank Minority Counsel. They've brought to this hearing testimony of March 13, 2002. It's you and me, Dr. Goss. You got this one, too?
Is it the verbal?
Yeah, the Q&A. You know, that's all right. Yesterday, Chairman Walsh referred to this as Groundhog Day. And I listened to him. I kind of half chuckled reading this. Now I almost want to laugh out loud. There are things that we've talked about here. This is back in 2002. You and I had a little banter going back and forth here. And I asked you a specific question. Oh, gosh, we talked about who's in charge, I'm in charge. A lot of your questions, I mean, you're the admiral here. I'm in charge, I'm responsible, away I go, the ship, I'm in charge of the ship. But then when we got into specific lines of authority, do you have the specific line authority? And your answer is, no, sir. I do not have direct line authority. I have indirect authority for matters of IT, and I have sub-organizations within the structure where I deal directly with these people on matters of enterprise architecture and cybersecurity, and that it is an efficiency gained over the past year because I do not have to go to an undersecretary to get it approved, to go to the deputy undersecretary in order to get one of the CIOs. I pick up the phone, I call, I direct. So basically you're saying that I could get this thing, I could get it done, I could achieve even though I don't have line authority. I think looking back on all of that, you would probably look at this and say, that was pretty hard to accomplish. Because what we have learned here is that unless we give you the tools, how can you really accomplish that? You know, and I mean that's kind of where we are. I'm not picking on your testimony and your role. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to go back in time, see where we were, where are we today, and how we move to cure. And there's something else in here that let me go to this one. We even had a conversation, and this deals with compliance. And we were talking about the lines of authority again. And then I got into the question about the rating of people. And I asked you, what input do you have with regard to rating people? And you said, I have direct input to the reporting seniors of these folks for what goes into their performance evaluation. I then say, okay, then with regard to promotions and merit bonuses, do you have an input into that also? And you then say, the process at the VA? And I said, if you are working with someone in one of those administrations who is messing with you and making life difficult to get implementation to the one VA, is what you were talking about at the time, going, do you have the ability to say no to a merit bonus? And you say, I do not have that. The reason I took time to go back in history with regard to this conversation is that since your days at the VA to today, we advance ourselves, the VA has continued to receive this failing grade. Yet we have individuals of whom receive bonuses. Now, going back to this whole question that Mr. Bilirakis had brought up about micromanagement, you're absolutely right. We don't like to do that. We have an oversight responsibility and function. But if we're going to create a package, and part of that package is also going to be on personnel issues, whether it's in specific statutory authority or in report language, if we are to say that with regard to performance reviews, if as a CIO you are to ensure compliance, should IT compliance be one of the criteria of performance reviews or merit bonus? So I'm interested in your thoughts. Dr. Goss, Mr. McFarland, Mr. General Howard.
Mr. Chairman, as far as the recommendation of including those as part of the evaluations, I would agree.
All right. Thank you. Mr. McFarland?
I would submit to you that I not only agree, I would submit to you that there is proof that it works. Because if you remember, last time we got an F, one of the major reasons we got an F is because we did not have our 600 major systems certified and accredited. And when Secretary Principe got very upset about that, we asked for authority to include the potential of bonuses not being paid in the outcome if all of those 600 systems did not get CNA'd within a year. Those 600 systems did get CNA'd in a year, and it was because of that potential financial threat. I'm convinced of that, because he was very clear with the management team that he would look very harshly on bonuses and people's paychecks would be affected if this didn't happen. So I would submit to you that it does work.
General Howard?
I totally agree, sir. It's a good mechanism that ought to be put in place.
All right. Then let's envision this for a moment. How would this work under the federated model? You are now an undersecretary. You have responsibility under FISMA to ensure compliance. The secretary has now directed authorities to you. I'm anticipating that finally this slow roll approach over Directive 6500 after 3 years is finally coming, is what I'm hoping tomorrow. How do we do it? How do you do this? Can you turn that on for me, your microphone on, please?
You know, violated one of these policies. We can make it very clear that he has done so. But the punitive action itself can't be taken by the CIO. It would have to be taken by his supervisor.
All right, but let's keep it to the question on performance measure.
Right.
So I'm in one of the stovepipes.
Right.
So I now, as a middle-level manager, just like you directing a battalion,
right.
You've given a directive to your battalion commander that you want certain things to be noted. So in all of your officers, they have to make sure that they're compliant with one of your directives. Mm-hmm. So how do you, as now an undersecretary of CIO, you've got CIOs completely under you. Right?
Right. And
how are we going to
those folks belong to me. There's no question about, you know, disciplinary action, any kind of action against folks who directly work for the CIO.
Okay.
If they work somewhere else, you know, clearly violations of anything should be reported to the CIO. You can have that provision.
Wait, but you're off subject again. Let's go back to the issue on bonuses.
On bonuses.
On merit, performance, and bonus.
And the individual is in one of the stovepipes.
Yes.
And gets a bonus.
Wants a bonus.
And should not have.
But is not compliant.
And should not have got the bonus.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing you can do is elevate it to a higher level. Because, right.
Let me time out. Let's break this out. One of your CIOs is at one of the medical centers.
Sir, he belongs to me.
But he's at one of the medical centers.
Doesn't matter. He belongs to me.
He's at one of the medical centers, and he belongs to you.
Yes, sir.
He is sitting at the table, as any good hospital administrator would do. He's got him at the table there. And that the hospital administrator now, the medical director, or excuse me, the hospital administrator has One of his issues are to be compliant, and I'm trying to figure out under the federated approach, since the CIO is not going to be in these lines of authority with regard to punitive actions, but if you make it a performance measure, then it's the secretary to the undersecretary that has to ensure that certain directives are made and are compliant.
Yes.
That is our challenge with tomorrow's panel.
Sir,
because what is clear today is that with regard to the general counsel's legal opinion that said unto Bob McFarland that you don't have this authority, then that authority then vested with the secretary. 6,500 directives just sat out there. Nothing was really acted on with regard to those authorities. It vested with the deputy and the three undersecretaries. And even though you had the responsibility of compliance, authority wasn't exercised to bring that department in compliance with FISMA.
Sir,
I'm just letting you know that.
Okay, sir.
So my challenge here is if we're going to go under the federated approach and we say, fine, we're going to bring it into a performance measure, your CIOs out there can be a counsel to that administrator. Nudge them, remarks, meeting with them, make sure that they're compliant because here's what we got in the pipeline or here's what's going on. That's what he's there for. He's to be the counsel to the administrator. You agree with that?
Sir, he also has a black hat on his head, too.
He
needs to report instances that are not in compliance.
And who does he report that to?
Up the chain to me.
All right. But he also has a responsibility to the hospital administrator, correct?
Yes, sir. He sure does. As a customer. You know, he is a service provider.
Okay.
But he also has eyes and ears, and he needs to keep them open. And if he uncovers things that are not going on, I expect him to do something about it. Obviously, to inform the hospital director, but me too. I mean, it's like 1st Brigade and 2nd Brigade. You know, I can't give an Article 15 to some guy in 1st Brigade, but I sure can put heat on that brigade commander through the division commander. I mean, and it's particularly a problem in the punitive type of action.
So this is going to require, let me turn now to Gartner. Under the federated approach, in order for this to work, this is going to require some pretty stern leadership from the secretary, deputy secretary, to the undersecretaries to perfect.
It does not relinquish leadership at any level, sir. That's you characterized it as stern. That would probably be a good thing. But the model itself doesn't preclude that leadership from being exercised, those authorities to be implemented.
I appreciated your sharing us your insights with regard to the Ms. Herseth's questions. She did a very good job today with regard to the concurrence and non-concurrence. That was insightful for us. I'm glad I appreciate the Deputy Secretary being here today that you're hearing that. And those are things that you've struggled with over the years that you've worked. But those timelines, I think that has been recommended is probably pretty important. Having that directive sitting out there for 3 years is probably not a good thing. And we'll get a chance to talk about that tomorrow. With regard to non-pay contractors involved in software development, do you know how many of them there are?
Numbers of contractors, sir, I'm not sure. I'd have to get that for you.
Mr. McFarland, would you have any idea, approximately?
Contractors are in non-pay, yes. I don't know exactly how many are there. I could give you an educated guess. I would say it's somewhere between 500 to 700, I would guess, throughout the department. And that's made up of administrations and staff offices. That would be my guess.
Now, there is
Sir, if I could pile on, I mentioned that we have phase one of this program we put in place, assessment. We finished the internal part. The next step is contractors. You know, where are they? What are they doing? Et cetera, et cetera. When we get through with that, we can give you some feedback.
Secretary gave testimony yesterday to Mr. Walsh's subcommittee on appropriations with regard to concerns about a subcontractor perhaps releasing debt if they didn't receive a proper payment. The Secretary responded that he was not aware that he had any prime contractors that were offshore. Now, as I understand, this was, which may be, in fact, technically correct, but if, what happens if we also put in our package so that we are not jeopardized, nor our national security, with regard, if we're going to have contractors, that they may not subcontract with any offshore entity? What are your thoughts?
Sir, I'm not familiar with the details of the incident. I believe you're right. It was a subcontractor that was involved.
Will you make sure, if you know about that, will you make sure the Secretary is briefed for tomorrow?
Yes, sir.
All right. Mr. McFarland, your thoughts?
I think it is important to know who subcontractors are. There are difficulties in the IT world today. It is an international product. So much of what is put into IT, both hardware and software today, much of it does come from various overseas subsidiaries and various overseas environments through contracts. I think it is wise in the contracting process to understand who your subcontractors are and put in a requirement that requires they notify you if they intend to push any of that work offshore. And then you can make a decision at that point whether you believe that is, I mean, pushing something offshore to Britain, for example, may not be near the issue it would be to pushing something offshore to China. And I think it's a matter of understanding and having a requirement would be good to know what, if any, offshore requirements come up.
All right. I'm gonna go to Dr. Goss, but I want you to think about this. So I'm going to come right back to you, Ms. McFarland, about your counsel to us with regard to what should be included in our package. Because I kind of got what you got by concept, but I want you to think about it. I'm going to come back to you. Dr. Goss?
I would think that in dealing with the purchase of purely commercial products and the support services that go with that, those commercial products, it would be very difficult to sever offshore relationships. That said, any contract that is done for the government, where the government is getting specific products and services that meet a specific government need, I think you could impose restrictions that limit offshore involvement. But there are two separate camps here, I believe.
Well, we have experience in this in the Department of Defense with regard to our procurement policies. Who's going to build what? Who gains access to what? From weapon systems to guidance systems. I mean, you name it. I hate to create that type of system, but I'm very insulted that there's a company out there in another country that would try to blackmail our country. And that's what they tried to do. And what that does is it creates a heightened awareness. And you're absolutely right. You don't want to penalize Great Britain or penalize any of our valued allies in the world. But I'm pretty concerned. And I'm going to come back to you, Mr. McFarland. Take your concept and take it the next step. What's your best counsel to me?
Well, as Dr. Goss said, there are two distinct domains here. Those are products and services that are bundled, if you will, such as a workstation, a printer, any kind of bundled service where components come from all over the world. You have things called TAA and BAA, Buy American Act, those kinds of acts that preclude you from taking product made in certain countries that don't meet those requirements. So you're protected there. I think your biggest problem is the other domain, which is the services domain, where you contract with someone for a service, transcription services, you name it. And there you run into the problem, I think you should require that before any subcontractor allow any of that work to go offshore, that he get clearance from the VA so that the VA has an understanding of whether that offshore is Great Britain or if that offshore is China. And I think it'd be wise.
So number one would be a notification procedure.
Right. And then an approval.
And then an approval process.
Right.
Right. Go ahead.
I mean, I'm not familiar enough with our contracts for services in the VA to know, and I'm sure each of them is unique for the service, but those to me ought to be clauses that are boilerplate and that an approval process be required if a subcontractor is an offshore entity or any of the information is offshore.
All right, here's why I'm taking a little time on this particular issue.
Excuse me, yes. Mr. Chairman. The only thing I might add with respect to services is it would be significant, yes, to identify the subcontractor as an entity, but quite often knowing the key personnel and their background and or other attributes about them might also be significant and important to such an action.
Thank you for that, because the Secretary has brought up several times the issue about background searches, background checks. The individuals that have access to certain data, even within the VA, have not had background checks. So what, we're going to highly scrutinize Americans, yet permit some of this services and access to data to be subcontracted to a third world country with no form of notification or compliance or approval? So I think we need to pause and think about as we develop our systems. Thank you very much. So now let me turn to DOD. And that's why I'm pretty concerned, is my first question would be, because I do not know the answer to this, when a forensic analysis of the data was done with regard to what has now been was stolen, were with regard to active duty, guard, and reserve, were MOSs included?
No, sir.
No?
No, sir.
Okay. Does does the VA, within their within the universe of their data, would they have the MOS?
No, we don't furnish the MOS as part of our data transfer. On separatees, the DD Form 214, and I'm not exactly 100% positive, on separatees, I believe the MOS is included on the DD Form 214. That does not come in a data exchange. It comes through a basically paper form and is actually automated by the VA. When it's automated, I'm not sure if they include the MOS, but I would assume they do. But it's not part of our automated feed from the Department of Defense to VA.
Much of our present war on terror is operated in the dark world. And I have heightened awareness of our special operators, and they sure don't want the world to know who they are and what they've done. And I am really concerned with regard to protections of data that's out there. Because I look at this and say, well, yeah, this may have happened, but what's next? What could happen? And I don't want to blow up worst-case scenarios, but I've Deputy Secretary, this is an issue I want to explore with you over the next several weeks, and we'll bring it up tomorrow on how we develop a system. Because, you know, as we work here with Department of Defense, they're not going to be too keen about how do we get to a health medical records, you know, if we can't give can't give veterans assurances, we've got to be able to give our partners even assurances. I don't have an expertise or a background in procurement law, and so I'm going to have to turn to experts to help us on how we devise a system to do this. Let me ask a question about biometrics, user ID numbers. I'm also considering placing in our package. This package will be large enough that we'll have jurisdictional referrals to other committees. We're going to recommend changes to FISMA. I'm not going to have any of this in the future about lawyers' interpretations. We're going to make this pretty doggone clear. And I've already spoken with Mr. Davis about it. So we're going to make those corrections. I'm also considering saying to the Department of Defense in this legislation and the VA that you cannot use the Social Security number. So let me ask for your thoughts about that. They're going to have to come up with a soldier's ID number or some type of number that both the VA and DOD use that's not the Social Security number.
In passing, sir, I referred to a consolidated feed between DOD and the VA, which would replace these legacy feeds that we do. In that consolidated feed, we feed the VA a new ID number, which we give a very odd name to. It's called Electronic Data Interchange Person ID. It's a made-up number. And it is the number we actually trade with the VA in the consolidated feed instead of Social Security number. And it could form the basis for interaction between the two departments without reliance on Social Security number. Having said that, Social Security number remains an important identifier in establishing identity. Once identity is established, then between agencies and in large-scale computer systems, it would be possible to only use Social Security number simply as an identity anchor and not a way to trade information between systems. I might add we do that also with the medical community, and we've established this number as a patient ID with the medical community and also pass that over to the VA as well. There are new technologies that are emerging that would allow us to de-emphasize Social Security number as a universal identifier. Having said that, totally banning it from IT systems would create chaos. But it could be de-emphasized, especially in terms of data interchange. And again, once identity is established, its importance recedes, and that could be emphasized in legislation.
Our challenge here is so long as the federal services, so long as the financial services industries rely upon that Social Security number, therein lies our challenge. So if I take that out of the of their criteria, you know, I at least can protect our veterans and our military. What we'd have to do is when they take their oath of enlistment or their commission, we're reverting back to the old days, where you get your soldier's, you know, you get your ID number, your soldier number. Whatever. Do you remember what yours is? What is it?
U.S. 54342381.
There you go. You guys know yours?
Yes, sir. 097560.
Wow. Well, I'm just letting you know that's where I'm considering going. And it might create a heartache for you because if you've come up with some other kind of number, we'll figure out how we can best do this, and we want to work with DOD to do that because that will also be what we'll use with regard to our patient medical records and that type of thing.
Sir, I might add, within the VA for employees, we have discussed going to ID numbers for employees. To let you know where we're some of the major areas where we're thinking about, and this is not an exclusive list at all. As this committee and others work together, we're going to look at this issue on performance reviews and criteria. We're going to consider this movement of the CIO to an undersecretary and elevate the CISO. To the deputy secretary, or assistant secretary, I'm sorry. I personally asked the secretary what personnel changes, if any, does he need with regard to his authorities with regard to disciplinary actions. To make sure he can ensure compliance or fire someone. We're going to look at the issue on the monitoring package. I am deeply appreciative to the VA on what they had done, stepping forth to offer that to veterans, along with the insurance package. That was a good thing. I am deeply disturbed with regard to the lawsuit. For the VA to lean forward to take actions to help the veterans, and now for a class action lawsuit to prevent you from advertising that assistance, what it does for us is it shows that time is of the essence for us to move our package and we're going to have to give a directive. The secretary shall. And we want to work with you with regard to our language. But when I come in and I give a mandatory language instead of discretionary language, what I've done is I have shot a hole through this class action lawsuit out there. We'll also we'll include some FISMA changes. The DOD, VA, not authorized to use Social Security numbers with regard to the personal identification. We might direct them to create a soldier's number, an identification number. Probably will be better to do it in the prospective manner than to say that you shall not or cannot use a Social Security number. I mean, that doesn't make a lot of sense. We want to address the issue with regard to the outsourcing, and we're also going to bring back our issue on centralization. I haven't let it go. I can't let it go. I respect, Gordon, your opinions. I got to figure out how we can get there. With regard to, let me ask Gartner. I won't keep you here much longer, but let me ask Gartner Consulting. When you turn to one of your major corporations out there and you've now said we need to centralize your IT, how long does that take?
Mr. Chairman, there are a number of factors in that kind of advice. Particularly the current business environment. Because, as we all know, it's not all about IT, meaning that the way decisions are made in the business, or in this case, in the mission and the business, will set the stage for how successful centralizing and or federating the IT portion of that business. We do counsel that once the decision is made, centralization, rough order magnitude, would probably take anywhere between 12 and 36 months. And there are a lot of variables there. The global dispersion of the assets and the people and the organization, the degree of the sheer volume of systems and other items that need to be brought under control.
All right, well then let me break it down and go right to security. So when the VA designs a security policy, they finally can get that done, what kind of training is going to be needed to promulgate that policy to make sure it's properly implemented? What kind of time are we looking at?
I'd be guessing, sir.
You're consulting a lot of companies out there that make changes and all. I mean, 3 months, 6 months,
right.
There,
there's,
months,
there's probably a footprint that needs to be established that has a defined period in which it should be established. And then beyond that, there's the continual changes of new personnel coming aboard, potentially other changes in personnel role, et cetera, that would need to be addressed. In terms of time...
Let me re-ask the question, because you're very good at dancing now. What is a reasonable timeline with regard to implementation of a security policy for an entity such as the VA or a major corporation?
Implementation of a security policy. Pardon? Well, I'm not a security expert, sir, but I would imagine that something implementation-wise starts within a 90-day period and potentially to a 180-day period.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take DOD?
To implement a security policy?
Yes.
I mean, in the basics, it's taken a number of years. I mean, and security is always evolving and changing. I mean, the centralization of the global information grid took probably over 2 years, you know, and the security policies associated with it. But we're very diverse and decentralized with IT. So I'm not sure there's a corollary there for the VA.
Well, kind of, because you're very decentralized, and so's the VA. And it's not that's all that bad either.
No.
And just because it's decentralized doesn't mean you don't have security policies. They have security policies. It's that it's an agency-wide security policy. So it's the development of the agency-wide security policy and the implementation of that as you centralize is our challenge, right?
And if I can make one comment, I mean, there are policies all over the place, and security policy is certainly one of them. It takes a long time to articulate and work its way through the system. One thing that DOD has done that's been very effective, I believe, is the establishment of a joint task force for network operations protection, JTF-GNO. And they are very fast in terms of identifying a security issue, finding a fix to a security problem, mandating that the fix be implemented, and enforcing the implementation of that fix. It's like, if you will, a kind of go team that takes the security policy, puts it against the real-world threats that are out there, monitors those threats, and then takes action. And that I found to be particularly effective within DOD.
So let me ask this about FISMA for a moment. When the FISMA audits have come back and have given the VA very poor ratings over the last 4 years, as we proceed in this federated model, the responsibility here rests with the Secretary. He acknowledge his responsibility. Who does he delegate this to with regard to compliance based off the FISMA audit? Are you aware, General Howard?
Sir, it will be cleared up with this delegation memo I referred to, but as I sit here today, it's my problem, you know, to set the policies and set the actions that need to take place to alleviate a deficiency. because of the reorganization that will take place, a good number of those will rely with me now. For example, take the protection of server rooms and things like that. That's now my responsibility within the, with the current direction we're going in the IT reorganization. I don't know if that answers your question, but
yeah, you have a really difficult job. You do. I'm not here to beat you up at all, because you're saying to this committee, it's me. That's no differently than what Admiral Gossett said back in 2002 to Ms. Carson. It's me. So you can do everything you want, but if you don't get the backing from the deputy secretary or the secretary to make sure things happen to those undersecretaries, you're going to be back before this committee. Members of Congress are going to be asking you, why once again did you get an F in the audit?
Sir, the backing is absolutely necessary. You're exactly right. But it's up to me to make it clear as to what should occur. That is my problem. And we got a lot of work to do in that area.
DOD, you received an F on your audit too, did you not, from FISMA?
I believe that's correct.
Why did that happen?
I really don't know. I mean, I'm not competent to reply to that.
All right. I just thought I'd let you know I knew. You thought you were going to get away with it, didn't you? All right. I want to thank all of you for coming. I have a great deal of respect for you and what you're trying to do here. It is hard for me. I've never been a CEO. I've never run a major organization. It's hard for me, though, in today's time, whether it's a government department or agency, or whether it is whether it's a company or any form of entity, when I have IT involved, why I would not make the CIO my new best friend. I don't understand why that would not happen. I had an opportunity, just to let you know, McKesson, a company out there, Bloomington Hospital, just outside of my district, they wanted to modernize their IT. They wanted to do some centralization and do some things, and they brought in McKesson. And the hospital administrator brought in someone from Purdue University, very sharp in information management, and made that CIO his best friend. And it sent such an incredible signal to the medical director to get on board, that these things are coming, these changes are made. Whether it came from the business side of the house, give me what your recommendations are, what are you looking for, the CIO is going to look at it. On the medical side of the house, as we are going to, whether it's from filmless and medical technologies, everything had to be compatible. And everything had to go through the CIO. And everybody at the board table knew that. And everybody was also enthused to talk about how, as a team, they were all going to work. And they all wanted to know and associate with the CIO. That was a system of pure empowerment. And they were able to perfect changes in a hospital setting rapidly. So it's challenging for me, General Howard, why you are not new best friend. I don't know if you are or you're not, but what I'm saying is that I recognize you have a very difficult job, because you have to be the agent of change. And I don't care if you're going to change the flavor of ice cream at lunch, you're going to have somebody attack the agent of change. And it should never be taken personally when you're the agent of change. All right?
Yes, sir. I agree.
We want to continue to work with you. Please, if you have recommendations based off of questions, please be in touch with the committee as we formulate the package. To Gartner Consulting, thank you very much. You've well earned your pay in your counsel and advice to the VA. It's been very sound, and we appreciate that. The DOD, you still got your own work to do, and we'll send you back. We appreciate you coming out here today. This hearing is now concluded.